America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good, but are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue on Friday. Another foodie joining me from Granbury, Texas, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Michael Musselman. Gunner, what is up? Oh, my God. This happened yesterday. And he said he couldn't answer his phone. He couldn't answer his Skype, and I went to voicemail. Because, see, I don't... You're not supposed to hear this.
Hey.
What happened?
I don't know. It just... You just rang right now. When I said I'm here.
It went to voicemail before that, so, anyway.
Skype has voicemail?
Yeah, you have voicemail. I never... Well, yeah, you probably have a couple voice messages for me. I didn't say anything, because I thought you answered it. So I'm watching it. I'm like, okay, he answered it. But there's actually a little message on the screen that said voice messaging. So I should have known I went to your voicemail. But I didn't because I just figured that out here about the...
I just found my voicemail and I see 1, 2, 3.
There's a whole bunch of... there's a whole bunch of messages. So nice. The... What are you doing today? What's going on?
You want me to tell you what happened yesterday?
Yeah. Of course. Come on. Your life.
Okay. So, no. This is my spirit speaking from you.
Oh.
From the spirit world. No.
Your cat's
my scan. MRI.
Your MRI.
So, remember I said, don't worry about it, if you don't hear from them after they say it's going to be about a week before we get back to you, and it's a week. And you're like still stressing. You're like, oh man, don't worry about that. Worry when you're on your way home back from it, and they say it's going to be a week, and they call you and say, "Turn around, we got to talk." That's time to talk. That's the time to start. Is everything in order? So yesterday, I talked about that. I take my MRI, and it was fun. It was actually relaxing. I fell asleep for a couple points, and the lady even asked me, she goes, because this is the second time I've had there. She goes, you're the only person I know that's ever fallen asleep in this machine. And I said, it's pretty relaxing, actually. She's like laughing at me. And then she goes, you're the Marine, right? And I said, yeah. She goes, yeah. She goes, my brother-in-law's a Marine. He's crazy, too. And so we were kind of laughing about it. And so I get done. They give me the CD. So I have my own copy. I'm a professional doctor. I could read the CAT scan or MRI. And I'm driving back, and I get to maybe a couple miles from the hospital, and I'm about halfway between my hospital and my house. And my phone rings, and I look, and it says Granbury Medical Center.
That way. Yeah, and dude, I took a deep breath and I was like, pull over the side of the road.
I talked about this too much, and now it's happening.
Yeah, now karma's gonna run me over right now. I pull over and I'm like, okay, composure. Put the car in park because I don't want to roll into the lake or anything. Put the car in park on the side of the road. Till my hands are done. Answer the phone. Yes. Hi, this is Dr. O'Carroll's office, and that's my neurologist. Right? So I'm like, oh. And they're like, we're just calling to confirm our appointment we had on Monday with you. And I'm like, yeah. You know, and then the voice kind of changes like real quick. Like, yeah, that's fine. Mondays works out just fine. You know, as the adrenaline wears off, the dopamine kind of goes back to the body. Like, yeah, sure. And, man, I took a deep breath. I was like, oh, don't do this. Why do you, you know,
did you
big
ask
man
them?
Upstairs got a sense of humor, too.
Did you ask them? Don't you know I just had an MRI, and you calling this close to the MRI? I swerved all over. Four people in the ditch out here.
Yeah, it was, but it was, you know, the MRI is a good time.
What's the difference between an MRI and a CAT scan?
An MRI does...
Isn't it the same machine?
It's something. It's like the big donut machine.
Yeah.
You know, the big tunnel donut machine. It has something to do with the images. Magnetic response imaging or, you know, MRI. But it's the image, how they do it. So it's like when you play it out, my daughter is looking at you because, you know, they do so many different angles. Imagine passing through, like if you go through the very top of your head all the way down to your brainstem, so they go through your whole brain, like, and through an image, like if you're just going to invisibly pass through it. Where CAT scans, I think, do more of like I don't know.
Well, here, unlike CAT scans, which use X-rays, MRI scans use powerful magnetic fields and radio frequency pulses to produce detailed pictures of organs, soft tissues, bone, and other internal body structures. Differences between normal and abnormal tissue is often easier on an MRI image than a CAT scan.
Yeah, I just know there's a lot more detail when you're looking at an MRI.
Yeah, MRI.
But it's cool is when you're, like, you look at, like, go to the top of your head, they do, it's like sliced, you know, like, ooh. And you can start seeing your eyes, and you see, like, and then when they go forward, so they look this way going, like, to your nose in your brain that way. So the images are all, and they're play out, so it's like a movie. Like, and so the images are, it passes through, they did one shot from my nose to the back of my brain, top of my head to my bottom of my neck, my left side all the way to my right side all the way to my left side, and then they did it with dye. And so the differences are you see the blood vessels, you see, you know, everything taking place. So Tina and Megan were around watching the video and, you know, so I'm looking at it and they're looking at it like, oh, that's so cool. You know, and I'm like, yes, that's what a genius brain looks like. And, you know, and then both of them, you know, do the eye almost simultaneously look up at me and like, please. You're looking at, this is what a Mensa brain would look like.
This
you
is
know.
What Leonardo da Vinci's brain looked like. Yeah.
Oh, no. Probably not even that dumb.
Don't.
We're talking much higher level than that.
You've probably never heard of him, but if you crack open the internet, you can find him there, I'm sure. So your one phone call. Yeah, you know, I never heard you said, oh, I'll call you later and let you know, but.
It wore me out. I was like, that when that phone
no,
call.
No, it didn't, because like, you were live streaming playing some stupid game. I'm like, what is this on my phone?
Oh, I found the coolest game.
Michael Musselman is live streaming playing. I'm like, he's like, obviously he's not worried about being dead.
No. So if you go to Facebook, you hit the word live. So you go live. Right?
Right.
And then there's, you got choices. Live video, draw it, or bring a friend. Mystery mask. Mm-hmm. I might do that. Popular mask. Well, these are like the masks. So now I may know what to do. But if you do draw it, what it is it's charades.
What do you mean charades?
Okay, so charades, like you're drawing something on a piece of paper without talking, like, okay, the three fingers on the wrist. Three syllables sounds like, no, you're just drawing it. And people that are watching the video in the chat guess, and if they get it right, they get, like, points. It's a game. So it even says, like, winner, Craig Volkel, you know, Kurt Winner. I had to draw a tiara.
Huh?
You know, the little crown that sits on a girl's head.
So it's like stick figure tiara?
So I draw a woman's face, her hair, and then I draw like what I think is a crown on top. Yeah. And so I put an arrow to the crown. Like that's what, you know, and one of my buddies came back and said, death?
gunshot wound to the head?
Oh man, it was funny. He was nailing them all, the pirate, sailboat, man. And I think I attribute that to my artistic.
Right. No. He was as dumb. You guys were on the same frequency. You're like a shitty drawer, and he's not a smart guy, and you guys just like synced.
Yeah.
Mind meld, yeah. So I'm like, what is this he's doing that he keeps
doing? That's a lot of fun. I like that game.
And it's available on live stream?
Yeah. So, like I said, go to Facebook, hit the word live.
Right.
And then I have a choice of live video and draw it or bring a friend. And if you do mystery mask, oh, I like that.
Mystery mask?
No, I don't like that. That's like, what is this mask? It's like a, I'm going to keep this mask. How do I keep this? Oh, dude, I want this mask. No, I don't want a mustache. It made me look like Merlin for a second.
Who?
Merlin.
Merlin the magician?
Yeah, I got to find that one. I'll start it, and then you can see it. Popular mask. Dude, it was hilarious. Popular mask.
So you did this as what, some kind of therapy as you came down from... your post CAT scan, or MRI, which did you have?
MRI. I had an MRI.
All right. So post MRI euphoria, you did this. This is your own self-induced therapy.
Yeah. Well, no, I was just laying there for a second, and then that came up, and then I was just watching it, and I was like, what's this? It was pretty cool. It's a lot of fun.
During the last hour, you sent a message that said less is better in cooking. Explain that.
Yeah. What? Because, you know, Rudy probably beat the waffle mix too much. So they probably ended up tough and chewy. You know? Tip number one, even if you use an instant pancake mix, just add water.
Right.
Because I do that every once in a while.
Okay.
But I like the, you know, making the pancake mix from scratch. But less is better. So sift the flour.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
And mix all of your wets together and all your dries together. So a lot of people make the mistake of, they put flour in, and then they put eggs, and then they put salt, and then they do this, and then they go back and forth wet, then they add the butter,
right.
Then they add this,
right.
And then you're always, because you're constantly mixing it.
Right.
No, mix all of your wets together. Put everything that, and wets would be butter, even though it's a solid.
Butter. Huh? Right.
Butter. So put all your wets together in one, mix it, put all your dries together, and I sift it. Put it through a sifter. And if you don't have a sifter, put it through like a wire mesh strainer if you have one of those.
Okay.
And then just tap the side and then it'll fall through. So sift everything. That way there you get all those. Is there weevils anymore in flour?
There might be, sure.
And so it's a weevil prevention. You don't want to have a weevil in your waffle or pancake. You sift it, just makes it aerates it, makes it better, mixes better. And then combine them. As you mix them, combine them, like you're stirring it slowly, and then probably two or more, and then stop. It's mixed. That's it. Let it sit. I let it sit for a little bit because I want all that stuff to come together, permeate, congeal, metamorphose, whatever they're doing inside there.
Coagulate.
Coagulate
all of it.
All that stuff. And then heat up the pan. And the problem is people always heat up pancake griddles or waffle griddles too hot because we're impatient. Right? You should always never ever flip a pancake, or you can't flip a waffle, of course, but you should never flip one before it's time. And you know how you know it's time?
The bubbles.
The bubbles form and the steam blows through, right?
Right.
So it's creating those caverns of goodness that grab the butter and the syrup. Those are butter caverns and syrup caverns.
Which is why God made the waffle. All right.
Because it holds more.
Right. They hold a ton of butter.
And all your syrup.
Oh, my God.
So then, once you see the steam and the warmth come through and it just starts to get that, the sheen goes away on the top, flip it. And then what you should see is as soon as you flip a pancake, the key to good pancakes, you know they're going to be good, is when you flip it, you see it lift. You see it come, it lift up. So it's.
What do you mean lift up? You mean it rise a little bit?
It rises off the top hand after the flip it.
Because it won't rise if it's already dead and beat to hell. It just lays there. But
Rudy's pancakes. Rudy's pancakes are like.
No, waffles. Waffles.
Like, you can put your hot water bottle on it. Waffles. And granite.
Interesting. Somebody, there's an email about some kind of thermometer. Hey, Mac, I sent you a cooking device to discuss with the chef, but he had to go. Sous vide, SOUSVIDE, is a cooking method with putting food in a plastic bag or jar and cooking it. Since the gunner is a cook, ask him if he has heard of this cooking tool.
What's it called?
Let's see. What I'm looking at is it's some kind of thermometer.
How's it spelled?
SOUSVIDE. It's a Bluetooth cooking device.
Oh, it's two words. Okay.
The Anova
method of cooking a food.
The Anova Precision Cooker
pouch.
Bluetooth. You can buy it at Best Buy, and I've got a.
Oh, come on! You know what this is?
What?
This is Scientology.
What do you mean? Master sous vide cooking with this precision cooker Bluetooth. This adjustable clamp ensures a secure fit on any of your existing pots, and the consistent digital temperature readout lets you monitor the entire process. This precision cooker Bluetooth works with the Anova application so that you can start making your meal from your phone. Okay. So you put jars and bags in water? I don't know how you make it. How do you control the stove from your phone? I don't think you'd do that. You can monitor it from. It's $90 too. Are you familiar with that kind of meal preparation and cooking?
Yeah, I've heard of it, but I also know that there's some kind of fakeness going on here.
Oh, and that's hence your Scientology comment?
Yeah. So it's this whole, I think. It was kind of BS because what they were doing the thing I saw was they were doing these steaks called, the sous vide steaks, and then the regular method. What they were using was better. I mean, the sous vide steaks were like Wagyu, and they were all marbled and they were perfectly cut. whereas the other ones were just like a store-bought, you know, steak, normal, you know, right here at Walmart or something. And they were just pan-fried. I mean, it's like, come on. Or they show, like, pictures, like, normal traditional method and the sous vide method. And, like, you, if you're cooking food and your shit looks like that, if your salmon looks white when you're cooking it, you know, because they show a picture, like, traditional is a way to do it. Traditional or cooked traditionally or cooked sous vide method.
Ooh.
Like, yeah. And if you're looking at this picture, man, come on. If you're cooking food like this, stop cooking.
Stop cooking? Just, go to some alternative form of meal preparation?
No, I mean learn to cook better. So, what? Hey, check this out. I just sent you...
sous vide is a method of cooking in which food is placed in a plastic pouch or a glass jar and cooked in a water bath or steam environment for longer than normal cooking times at an accurately regulated temperature.
Right. So it can't char. There's pictures of it like have char on it. You're not going to get char on a meat if it's in boiling water. Right?
I think
am I the stupid one here?
No.
Right?
I think you were the smart one in that conversation with yourself.
Yeah. So look at the picture I sent you.
Where did you send it? On Skype?
Yeah. So here's where I was looking at this. Like, here's the left side, cooked sous vide method, and then cooked on a skillet. Actually, I like the one on the skillet because, you know what? There are two pieces. Go on, it's two different pieces of meat.
Right.
It's not the same cut of meat, right?
Right.
But I like that because that's the way I like my steak. I like it kind of a little bit on the outside there and pink in the middle. And then if you're cooking salmon on the right and yours looks like that, stop cooking salmon. Just give it up. And then what they did was they took a picture of
beautiful salmon.
But it's probably not even cooked.
Yeah.
You know?
And then a picture of
here's the one that cracks me up.
Nasty salmon.
Here's a picture of an egg on bread. And then here's a picture of egg pop.
The yolk is popped.
Well, because they cooked it over medium. The other one is, you know, over hard. And the other one, because if they're both, if you cook that on, well, if you can't cook an egg over medium on a skillet or over hard like that and get that kind of, you know, result that they're trying to get on the left, because that's just boiling the damn egg.
Yeah, I don't. What's the purpose of it?
They say it's better for you. They say it's better for you, and they also say that, you know, you get better results from the cooking.
The cooking's gentler. It's gentler and more even.
Yeah, my problem with that is, I like having meat that has that barbecue char on it, on the outside. I don't like boiled meat.
Okay, look, if I don't want to be a communist, right? If I want to be a communist, I move to Russia or something like that.
Okay? Right.
Like, why? Like, this is
a California thing, man.
No, it's probably originating in Texas or Japan. Japanese people do this kind of stuff.
This is French. There's only two places that people speak French or have French restaurants, and that's in New Orleans and LA.
When was the last time you saw a French? The last fresh French restaurant I saw.
You know what French restaurant is here in Granbury?
No.
Mimi's Cafe.
Yeah, in the last.
You know what they serve?
The only one
fried
I know.
Chicken.
The only one I know is the one in San Clemente. That one as you go down Del Mar. Yeah, on the left hand.
There's one in Laguna.
There's one on the left hand side with the yellow. It's got kind of the yellow awning and drapes set down there. As you go down Del Mar towards the beach.
There's a place in Laguna down by Main Beach that uses this method to cook.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it. Sous vide. Yeah. Oh, come
this
eat
is
our
a joke, man. This
come
is a joke.
Come eat our food. It's sous vide prepared.
This is a joke. This is that new. No, this is a joke. It means French under vacuum is a method of cooking in which Food is placed in a plastic pouch or glass jar and cooked in water, bath, or steam environment for longer than normal cooking times. 1 to 7 hours. I don't want to wait 7 hours for my steak.
Hey.
Up to 48 or more in some cases. Okay, wait a second. I'm going to have something cook. I don't even know what I want for dinner until like an hour before. Now you're telling me I got to plan, like, we're having steak in next Tuesday. Let's start cooking it right now. And anything that's adopted, this method was adopted by Georges Préalis, a French chef. Name me the last time the French built something that were that they're known for. They didn't do even the French fries.
The Eiffel Tower, the Statue of Liberty.
Okay, so they're good at making statues and towers.
The Louvre is pretty impressive.
It's a building with art that most of the time, most people in there aren't even French that actually have their stuff on display. They're Italian or Spanish or Portuguese.
Okay. Well, point well made. Point well made. So they can steal a lot of art. You got to give them credit for that. What the French, the French, the French. What else when I think of France? What do I think of?
The baguette. They didn't do that either.
The baguette? It's a French word, though, right?
Yeah, they just name it.
So they give it a sexy name, a French name, yeah. And then we Everybody all like, oh, it's French.
That, and that thing's been around. The Italians did that before.
So the Italians invented the baguette. The French stole it. What else would I say when I close my eyes and
yeah,
I think
of think
the
of?
French? I think of the Eiffel Tower. I think of they got really excited when Lindbergh landed there.
He was not French.
He wasn't French, but they were out there in the dark when he landed. Like, come on, let's go out to the airfield. That guy Lindbergh's flying across the ocean from the United States. Yeah, but there's like 90,000 people there. We'll never see him. It does not matter. We will go. We will have fun. Like, all right.
Any country that builds a freaking defensive line and thinks that that's going to solve a problem.
The Maginot. The Maginot.
A monument to human ingenuity failure. That's what that place is.
Echo One, Sierra. This is Big France One. Over. Hello. Where
the Germans are
where,
going around us?
Where are the Germans? They're not here. Can you see them? Yes, they are on the horizon. I can see their dust plumes. I think there is about a million tanks. I think that's what you call them. It looks like a tractor with a radio. Yes, and a gun. Yes, they are all going around us. We could see them going through Belgium. They should be at your position in 15 minutes.
We'll be in Paris in an hour.
What? What?
You're not supposed to go around us? Yeah, there's the
plan. Damn it. You know how much money we sunk into that shit? Okay, well, you start shooting their guns. Us? At what? It doesn't matter. We need to convince people we are shooting. We are putting, because the last thing we want is another joke about what? Who tells a joke? What joke are you talking about? French rifle, never been fired, dropped once. That joke? Nobody likes that joke. Oh, yeah, that's a bad joke.
Okay.
Damn it.
So here we go. So here's the 10 things France does better than any place else.
Oh.
And yes, we're beating up on France today.
Yeah.
Cheese. I would say no. No. But they say this. Cheese. Yes, it's a cliche.
What kind,
France
what,
remains
what kind of
the
cheese?
Ultimate destination for cheese.
What kind
but
of
they
cheese?
Make the freaking smelly cheese.
Oof. What kind of what kind of cheese? Is there
it's
any specific Is there any specific type of cheese of just
No. Oh yeah, such as some French cheeses such as Reblochon are so smelly and runny they seem to be decomposing.
Yeah, I'm
so,
not eating.
There you go. There's French's.
Yeah, I'm not eating.
The cheese,
that.
Bro. Shopping.
Okay. What?
Yeah. See, this is where
nobody has better shopping than America. Okay, we invented it for God's sake.
I know. Well, here we go. Museums, best known for museum. You even said it. The Louvre.
The Louvre. It is a pretty substantial.
But see, here's the thing, difference, though, is they stole, this is other people's art. Yes, the art place, but this it's not mostly their art.
No, the Louvre is a building, okay? What makes the Louvre special is the art that they've stolen.
Is everybody
else's
art?
How did they get all that art? I mean, I don't understand.
Trains.
What?
Okay, here's Well, this is why I know France is, they're all screwed up.
French, they wrote this. French trains are faster than planes?
Did you see that too? Yeah.
Yes.
No, France, let me tell you something. Planes are faster than trains, okay? And no matter what, you don't have a train in France that's faster than a plane. Okay? Your planes cannot break the speed barrier 2x, or sound barrier, okay? You don't have trains that could do it 2,000 miles an hour. It's, no, don't, just, we're going to skip that one.
Okay.
Traffic jams. Oh, there you go.
You know, one of the things about the United States is that drivers, for the most part, you know, obey the rules of the road. We're an orderly society. You go to other parts of the world, oh, my God, it's ridiculous. Nobody even, I mean, traffic lights, what are those for? Oh, I know, they're just general guidelines. I know it's red, but come on, who pays attention to that? And then as soon as it turns green, everybody starts honking their horns. What is going on? But whenever I'm in those countries, I always honk my horn because it's what everybody does. So,
politeness.
No, I would argue no. They're the most arrogant. The French and the Israelis are legendary for their rudeness.
Yes. Sexiness.
If Anderson Cooper ever comes on my screen again, I'm going to choke you.
Oh, I know. I saw that. Did you see that?
What?
Whatever. So, sexiness. I like that. Take French films, for example, which by almost by law must have at least two naked breasts and four buttocks.
You know, they did pioneer that a little bit.
Yeah, they did. I'll give it that to them. Luxury.
Yeah.
Yes, we'll give that to them. If you've ever seen French movies back like in the 17th century.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about.
Yeah.
Yes. They were French know how
show clear.
To like really overdo it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only other place that I've been into that's more tacky than a French castle is Saddam Hussein's castle in Tikrit.
What was that like? Did he live there?
It was like being in a French castle.
Did he live there? Because he had all those different places, but he didn't live in most of them.
He lived in this one.
He did, in Tikrit. That's where he...
That's
where they found him. That's where they yanked him out of the hole in Tikrit.
We're in that area, yeah. And we were there. And we were there. It was funny. We got the palace that did get a JDAM through it, where the army got the one with the JDAM.
Dude, we got in Ramadi at Blue Diamond, where Mike and I met. They put a JDAM right through his bed, I think. If you went into that palace, this thing came right through the dome of the master bedroom, blasted through that dome and then through the next floor. Like, hello.
Yeah. Every palace that he owned that they thought that he could have been in, and they knew his bedroom. When they hit that night, every palace, every known sleeping quarters of Saddam at the time got a JDAM. Through the bedroom. Now, they probably only killed the butler and the maid.
Yeah, the poor
son of a bitch. Sweeping the hallway.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, those poor jackasses. But yeah.
Well, it's like Clinton. That's all Clinton killed when he was president, you know.
Oh, when you do that.
When we do all the retaliatory, you know, let's send a strong message to these terrorists that we can't do this. All right, what do you want to do? There's a terrorist building headquarters in this place in Africa. All right, let's hit it. What time? Well, we don't want to hit civilians. Okay, 3 a.m. sound good? Yeah. Who's there? The janitor. So Clinton was more, he killed more janitors in his presidency than I think any other president. I mean, if you were working as a janitor or night watch security for bad guy headquarters or us, and Clinton was president, you were going to die.
Yeah, they probably figured it out. It's like, look, the Americans always do this after midnight. I'm going to get in. I'm going to be out by the guardhouse at 3 after midnight. And I'm not, you know,
Jonesy, why don't you go? It's your tour of duty or your tour. Why don't you go check out the main building? Because the new guy, right? He doesn't know. And then you look over at you look over at Kurt, and you're like. New guy.
He's stupid.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want to take some earplugs with you? Why? I'm not going to need earplugs.
That's going to work.
I'm not going to need earplugs just to go do rounds over there. You might.
No, that's what you look at and go, you're right, new guy. Earplugs won't help you. You only have ears because they're going to separate from the side of your head.
But you never, ever going to know about it.
This one is the other one, globalization. So, but if you talk about French colonization, it's not globalization. That's colonization. It's
right.
The difference.
Right. Algeria.
America's globalized. We're globalized. We do globalization.
Yeah, we're global. We're global, like Pitbull.
Yeah. But France did colonization, where they had colonies. Oh. When they were at their height, they would go around and they would do this stuff.
Vietnam.
They'd take over countries. Yeah, Cambodia. A lot of the
Southeast Asia.
Pacific Islands.
Yeah.
Tahiti. You know, they're French.
French.
French Polynesia. Yeah. French everywhere.
Colonize is another word for we're going to exploit the shit out of you because we want what you got.
Colonize is the right word to say. Yeah, it's the word to say in public instead of saying we're going to strip all of your natural resources from your country. We're not going to give you shit. We're going to treat you like third world citizens. You're not going to have any rights. We're not even going to install even a puppet government that sits on top of you that'll govern you.
Of your own people.
And then tax the shit out of you.
Of your own people, no less.
Of your own people, yeah. And then once you run out of minerals, your oil, your whatever, and then we're going to put you in the weaving business and you know and all this other shit. You're going to make rugs for us for the rest of the years. And once we're done with you, you know, we depleted you dry. That's what colonization is. So when people talk about, oh, God, America, what have you done? No. When you look at the other countries, what they, you know, England, Spain, France, hell, even Germany.
Germany you know, has, well, were, Germany colonies were in Africa?
Africa. They didn't branch out. Middle East.
You know, what's, you know, thank God the Russians didn't try to colonize anything.
Oh, they weren't smart enough.
They're animals. That's what the Germans thought. The Germans, if you read World War II, like they looked at the Russians as subhumans. They did not consider them, you know, they did not consider them as their like intellectual European, you know, counterpart. And so when the Russians got near Berlin, they knew that one wasn't going to go well. Oh shit, here they come. Yeah. And it didn't go well. But yeah, thank God the Russians didn't colonize anything. Did we colonize? What about the Philippines? We kind of colonized that.
Well,
We didn't really colonize it. We just plundered it. The Brits, the Brits were the best because, you know, they would.
Oh, the Brits were everywhere. Brits and the French.
Yeah.
The French were good too.
No, they weren't as good as the Brits. The Brits, when you go to places that the Brits were, they're organized. They taught people how to make money and exploit other people, which is capitalism. And everybody speaks English. Yeah. If you want to go on a nice vacation, if you go to Singapore, people probably speak in English. If you go to Hong Kong, people probably speak in English. You go all those ports that the Brits settled, awesome. Great stuff to visit. People speak in English. It's fun, easy to get around. You don't have to say, my name is Gunner. Where do I find the bus to the airport?
No.
Airport.
Well, that's a thing that you're supposed to do. When you're in a foreign country and you can't speak their language, the trick is you slow down and talk louder because they can understand you now in Vietnam. And then you've got to do silly mimes like you're playing charades, right? I'm looking. You point to your eyes. Looking. Four, you hold up number four, something to eat, and you're doing like the spoon in your mouth, and he's thinking, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Guy's an idiot.
Guy's an idiot, man. But you come home and then you tell your friends, and you see this on social media, like, you know, women especially, you know, like, oh, I just came back from France, and it was beautiful. But God, why can't they speak English over there?
Because they're French?
Allô? Yeah. Because their language would be French, and they are French, and they live in France.
And they've been in business about three times as long as we have? Maybe. Allô?
Allô? As they say in French? Idiot. Yeah, it always cracks me up. But the ambassadors of America,
we're the worst.
Oh, but you know what? I'd be the same way. If I was a French kid or a French waiter and you came in there and you're like, yes, we would like some baguettes and some fromage and some coffee. And, you know, and you're like, oui, oui. And I'd repeat it back like, you Americans and French, you know, are biggest idiots in the world. It's like, make it all lavish. And they're like, listening. And the wife would look over at us and go, oh, isn't the language is beautiful?
Beautiful. All the other French people are laughing.
What I'd like to do with you in front of your husband is this. And, and then there she's like, oh, this is amazing. And then you go back and you're like, two Americans, give them the cheap piece of loaf of bread and slap on some frickin' American cheese.
Oh, my God. Hold on. Rudy just sent a Bahamas, great place to vacation, the courtesy of the Brits. Yeah, the Brits all through the Caribbean. Right.
By courtesy, we would have never found it. Rudy, is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
The Americans would have never found an island sitting about 100 miles off the coast of us?
No, we wouldn't. We just got in business too late. But the Brits, again.
Well, we had to fight a revolution first.
I know. We had to fight the Brits. Nobody thought that was going to turn out well. Yeah, can you imagine the Brits?
Everybody's banking on the Brits, man.
Yeah, like, how could you not? How did can you imagine the Brits now? How do we screw that one up? We could have
France
Canada,
had a big,
United States.
When you read history, France had a huge role in that. They really did. They had a huge role.
In the American Revolution?
Yeah, they did.
What was their role?
The economic side of it in Europe. They were bleeding Britain for everything it was worth. I mean, because, you know, they were still adversaries. And it was just, it wasn't cost effective anymore for England to keep the hold of the colonies. They just couldn't do it. You know, that's what it came down to, is they did a cost benefit analysis and just decided, you know what, let them have it.
We whipped their ass, man.
No, we didn't, man.
Oh, I think we did.
Battle,
I think we did.
The British.
I think we smoked their ass.
Okay, name a battle in the Revolutionary War where we smoked England.
The Green Mountain Boys. Nathan, what's his name?
Nathan down in Georgia.
No, up in Vermont. Green Mountain Boys.
That was a skirmish then.
Oh, here we go. The Green Mountain Boys was a militia organized organization first established in the late 1760s in the territory between New York and New Hampshire. Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys, they put an ass whooping up there in the Northeast. Then we went down to the Carolinas, the Battle of Saratoga, the Battle of, what was the one?
We had Lexington.
Lexington? Lexington Battle, that was all like, that's all Boston-like stuff, right? I mean, Lexington, Concord, that was all like Paul Revere. That's all kind of legendary. There was a fight in the street, and the British, like, shot a bunch of Americans protesting, and we got indignant, and then Paul Revere took off on a horse. I'm not really sure how that
worked. My point is, name a battle that the Patriots won.
The Patriots?
Us, the good guys.
The colonies? The colonies?
Yeah, name a battle.
All right. Don't look it up. What was the battle the Battle of Trenton, where, you know, there's a great thing. You see a picture of Washington going across the Delaware River on Christmas Eve. Yeah, we're Americans on Christmas at night. Don't fuck with us. It's great. I saw Carrie Crazy Facebook Lady post that. I was like, whoa, that's actually pretty funny. So the Battle of Trenton, we went over and we smoked the Hussians, the German mercenaries that were sleeping and drunk.
My point is,
how about the Battle of York? How about the Battle of Yorktown? That's where they decided to surrender. Like, sorry, this is not worth it anymore.
Talking towards the end of the war now.
Okay, so did you want a specific part of the war?
They've been bled out then. I mean,
yeah, Who bled them out? The French? The French weren't even here. They were making baguettes, stealing them. They were stealing art and making baguettes.
The Battle of Yorktown.
Yeah.
What else?
The, I don't know.
You know how many battles there were in the Revolutionary War?
Three.
There were hundreds.
The Battle of Valley Forge.
There was a Battle of Valley Forge?
No, there was just miserable winter at Valley Forge.
Yeah, I know. So, like, the Battle of Bunker Hill. That was earlier in the war. You know, that was up in Massachusetts. So, the war takes place up north more.
We got our ass kicked, all right? The Battle of New York.
Lexington, the Battle of... They called the Battle of Lexington and Concord, the initial ones, it was our victory, but it was a raiding force, and they just came and went. So, yeah, okay. Siege of Boston, we won, because they never took Boston that time.
That's a bad time. You're going to take Boston and serve in combat. Like, why do you want to do that?
Skirmishes in the beginning, we win. The Battle of Gloucester in Massachusetts.
Those are all little skirmishes.
Little skirmishes. And then when the British start getting real, they're like, you know what? These little pesky little shits.
now they're pissed.
They're getting under the king's skin. It's time to do something about it. So they send the armies over. You know, that's when the big troops start showing up.
The guys in the red jackets show up.
The red jackets. Yeah, not the guys garrisoning the little cities. These are the army now shows up. And so one of the big ones that they kick off is the Battle of Block Island in Rhode Island. We get massacred. Then after that, the Battle of Cedars, the Battle of Trois Rivières in Quebec. We're fighting in Quebec. Back in South Carolina, Sullivan's Island, Turtle Gut Inlet. You know, I'd like to live in Turtle Gut. Where do you live? Turtle Gut.
Why do you name it Turtle Gut?
Yeah, Battle of Long Island. That was in New York, of course, if you don't know. Kips Bay, New York. Harlem Heights, New York. You know, so they're fighting down the same thing that we did in Civil War. They, you know, same kind of way they fight. They, you know, bulk army, the armies meet, and then they fight in a region. And then they either fight as they're retreating or, you know, trying to get to more supplies. So as you go through the White Plains, it's not until, like, the second, because the first Battle of Trenton, that's when you were talking about the Haitian, the Germans.
Right.
Were there. We captured those guys.
But that's early in the war, 1776. The war doesn't end until 1881 with the British surrender at Yorktown.
And that's what a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah. The bigger...
1775 is our Declaration of Independence, where we said, no more. The Revolutionary War didn't end until, like, the 81, 82, where we actually, like, we decided... We said in 1775, no more. Get out of here. We flipped them the bird. That doesn't make you free. There has to be blood now shed for this. So then the bloodshed happens for these years. And then in the 1780s, only then do we really see, and we're like, well, there is a... Because there were times, like, you read about Washington, he's like... I don't know, boys. we'll continue to fight, but
bring your
speeches never, you know. But
bring your
senior guys. He's like,
bring your earplugs. Yeah,
yeah.
But you know, but again,
you can't take another.
The decisive battles take place in the South, and that's where it gets brought to a head. You know, the Northeast is not decisive, and for the most part, Americans are getting their ass kicked, but they're not getting annihilated because. You know, we're not a regular force, even though at times we will attempt to be a regular force. But then when it goes down south into the Carolinas,
where it becomes decisive.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are in terms of major battles, it's kind of different. It's kind of like in Vietnam, right? You have the coastal fights with the Viet Cong, and then you have the mountain battles with the NVA, the North Vietnamese Army, and the mountain fights in the Central Highlands. those are men's events. That's like big time. You read those, you're like, holy shit. And that's kind of like the northeastern part, we don't do so well. But then it goes into the Carolinas, and we destroy.
And then, yeah.
We destroy some
fights. So you're talking about when you said, if you back up a little bit, you're going back up in the Carolinas. We're fighting, and we fight back into Virginia, and it was at Yorktown when Cornwallis surrendered.
Yeah.
But it was it is still known as today as the Franco-Patriot victory.
Who wrote that? The French?
No, that's actually in the book, buddy, in the history book.
In whose book? The Franco what?
It's called the Franco-Patriot victory.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Get over it.
But when you're
okay.
looking at, okay, so commanders and leaders on the field, Lord Cornwallis on the losing side.
Yes, Lafayette.
Yeah, George Washington, Benjamin Lincoln. People don't know about Benjamin Lincoln. Henry Knox. A lot of people have heard the name. They're like, ah.
Fort Knox.
I've heard that guy. Alexander Hamilton. You can find him on some of your money. The Marquis de Lafayette. Everybody's heard of this guy.
Oui. Yeah, but just because they had a few guys come over doesn't mean they have a hand in it.
No. I know, but they had military guys there.
Oh, my God.
They had the military. So who
was doing all the dying? So now you're like an officer, a general guy? I thought you were an enlisted guy.
No, there were soldiers on the ground.
We go to America. Let's get our asses whipped with those guys. We hate
them. We're not making fun of them. They did help us. Baron von Steuben. Thomas Nelson. Now you have these
Baron
guys.
Hold on. Listen, Baron. He was from Germany. He wasn't from France.
But listen to this guy.
France would be Marquis.
Ready?
Yes.
Marshal Jean-Baptiste Donanate de Vimera Comte de Rochambeau. That's his name. It's like, come on, France.
Rochambeau, that's like rock, paper, scissors, right? Hold on. Here's another email. Kick the Brits' ass at the Battle of Cowpens. That's a straight-up fact. That was down in the Carolinas.
In the Carolinas.
Here's another one. We kicked their asses in South Carolina, the Battle of Cowpens. Whoa. Cowpens sets up Yorktown. At Cowpens, we shit-stomp them, right? And then all the Americans are like, hey, what just happened? Hey, we kicked their ass, right? Let's grab all their shit and let's follow them up to Yorktown, and then we'll kick their ass. We'll get everybody there, and then we'll make them leave. And they did. And then they came back. They came back and they burned the White House in 1812. What? I thought we did this. Shit.
Yep.
Shit. Until Andy Jackson fought him down in New Orleans. There's a big song about that, if you don't know. I used to watch a movie called The Buccaneer with Yul Brynner in it when I was a kid. And Yul Brynner plays a pirate. He plays Jean Lafitte. And he brings his cannons and his pirates, and they help Andy Jackson repel the British at the Battle of New Orleans. The Battle of New Orleans is probably one of the great defensive battles where the defensive side hardly takes casualties, and they annihilate the British. It wasn't a good day for the Brits that day. Was not a good day. Andy Jackson. They came back. Yeah, this isn't done. We want another crack at this.
Yeah. And then if you ever heard of it, I used to listen to this from Johnny Horton, the song. This, I heard. That's a great song, man. The old one.
What is it? The Battle of New Orleans? I could sing this song, just so everybody knows.
I love that song, man. Yeah, I learned that song when I was seven.
It was in, it must have been like in on the Disney Channel or something like that. I don't know where I saw it. But yeah, if you ever see the movie The Buccaneer with Yul Brynner, there's a great, Yul Brynner's in love with some girl who lives in New Orleans, and she tells everybody he's a good guy, and they say, no. No, And so, anyway, it's a great fight.
That's the problem with our kids. Say, if you're a guy,
yes,
and you know this song, you live in the great era. Down in Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
You know what? Yeah, here's an interesting question for you, Mike. The Marine Corps has changed boot camp to put 2 weeks at the end of it because we take kids from a culture that says, how did that make you feel? Oh, come here. Mike does his first Arnold impersonation. Oh, come here. Put your head on my shoulder.
Oh, come here.
Come here, honey. Tell daddy what you think.
Tell daddy what's wrong.
What's wrong. Right? And then we bring him into this Marine Corps. And I mean, when you, for instance, you know, I've played audio from Admiral Stockdale. Admiral Stockdale smashes himself in the face with a stool so he can't be used as a tool of propaganda by the North Vietnamese. That's after he shaved an inverted mohawk into the top of his head, and they were going to put a hat on him and take him down to downtown, as they called it, to use as a propaganda tool. Right, he grew up in rural Illinois, right? The values that he grew up with were the same shit he learned at the Naval Academy, the same stuff that he learned he joined the Black Shoe Navy before he joined the Brown Shoe Navy, right? That culture doesn't exist in our country anymore except in rural America. There's parts of it that still exist, but they go to the same...
And in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, but then you bring them into the Marine Corps, and there's this... What?
And just to clarify, let's clarify real quick. Admiral Stockdale comes from the time of when you graduated the academy, Naval Academy, and they were still warriors. We're not talking about the guys today.
Yeah. I mean, John Allen tells a story about his father being the commander of the executive officer on a destroyer that's off the coast of Anzio during the Italian campaign in World War II. A German, listen to this shit, a German tank battalion is counterattacking the beachhead. And we all know that the biggest threat to an amphibious force is armor at the onset, okay? The captain of the destroyer, and I'm embarrassed, I can't remember his name, says, take this shit into the tide waters. And they start taking on German tanks. He gets wounded, and then General Allen's dad goes up to the crow's nest, and he's calling in fires on German tanks, okay? That's some shit, man. And then read the book, The Last of the Tin Can Navy, where those guys, when Halsey goes chasing the Japanese carriers and another force comes down to lay waste to the amphibious force, those guys say, time to be men today, boys, and they turn into this task force, and they slow them down, and they get the shit blown out of them. Yeah, that's when the Navy, like when Marines would fight the Navy, and it'd be a stalemate, right? The Marines would take their belts off, right? They'd sharpen we wore leather belts back in the day. They'd take those leather belts off. They would have sharpened the pin in the belt, and they're like, let's do this shit. And the Navy dudes in their Cracker Jack uniforms would say, with their switchblades, come on, let's go.
Yeah, and you look at Anzio's another good battle to read about because, you know, the three beaches, you have British on Peter Beach, the task force, and that would have been something to see, man. And I didn't do a lot of reading, but the force that attacked the port of Anzio was the Ranger force that made up of 1st Ranger Battalion, 3rd Ranger Battalion, 4th Ranger Battalion, and then 1st of the 509. And those guys, I mean, that's a crack outfit, man, and they're attacking that. And then you have 3rd
ID. Let me tell you, the Rangers to this day are
hard as nails.
And they're professional. They're as professional as you can be. And you wonder why Delta Force is so good. Like I say, like, we just killed, a couple months ago, we said it was 200 Russians. It was way more than 200, okay? And nobody's heard any of the details. Why? Because the SEALs weren't involved. Nobody's making a movie. Nobody's writing a book. And it was Delta Force guys. Where did the Delta guys come from? The Rangers.
They're quiet professionals.
Right. They come, but a lot of them are Ranger guys.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, if this would have been SEALs, you would have known about it. It's a joke. Hey, you're at a party, and there's 40 guys in there. Which one's the fighter pilot? It's a trick question. You don't have to figure it out. He'll tell you. And it's the same thing, like, hey, there's a SEAL and a fighter pilot in a room. Can you find them? Don't worry about it. They'll tell you. You don't have to go look for them. They'll tell you.
It's the truth, though. The SEALs, yeah. I worked with the SEALs in 2006 in Iraq, and I'm not, well, I did work with the SEALs then.
Great guys, but yeah. They're not.
But they, no,
they're flamboyant. They're French. They're the French of our military.
Institutionally, they got some issues. They got some issues. There's a guy in the brig in, anyway, I don't know, I'm not going to go there. But my point was the Rangers. The Rangers, man, when you look at the stuff that they did from Point du Hoc at Normandy, man, they are, yeah, they're every bit what it ought to be. They're studs.
If I couldn't have been a Marine, I would have been an Army Ranger. Yeah. No doubt. I would have done everything. I would have hurt, killed people to get into the Rangers.
No, they're, and again, do you ever hear about the Rangers?
No, because they're quiet.
You don't hear shit about them.
No, they're quiet.
Yeah.
So they're quiet professionals.
Interesting dichotomy, as opposed to the loud, boisterous naval special warfare community, which...
You're in the Navy, for God's sakes. It's like saying you're a Tier 1 organization.
No, it's
in the Coast
not.
Guard.
They're not in the Navy. They're SEALs. They're different.
Yeah, you started out as a boatswain, scrubbing metal and paint off on a ship.
Well, a lot of them didn't even do that, right? They test right in. They become special right away, which
yeah,
I
that was the deal. And, you know, you talk about the older guys.
I think that's part of the problem.
The older guys were a different breed because they had to work their way in there.
Right.
They didn't get that opportunity.
Right. And so you didn't come in to be a pretty boy. You came in and joined the Navy, and you had to do that in order to test into it. I think that was a better way of doing it. Just my opinion. I could be wrong, but normally I'm not. Here's another email. So now you two ask clowns are experts in the American Revolution. I don't know that much, but I know a little bit about it. And I did watch, what was the Mel Gibson movie?
Gladiator?
No.
Oh, that was Russell Crowe.
That was Russell Crowe. Although that is a good, that is the start of Gladiator is, no,
oh,
is notable. Whoever did that,
oh,
yeah, they were.
Missed an opportunity to make a great movie about kicking the shit out of the German barbarians.
Right. But, if you, Mike, the first time you saw the opening scene of Gladiator,
oh,
I went to the theater, and I'm going to go see this movie, Gladiator, and I'm with John and Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
And that scene starts to unfold, right? And it's just the way they are as they're getting ready. Archer's ready, and they're like, Maximus is walking down, and he's like fist bumping with guys, and they're like, hey, General, what's up? But they all act like like they've done it. It's a pretty amazing scene. And it starts, and I sit up in my seat, and then I've got my elbows on my knees, and one of my sons says, are you okay? I said, this is awesome, man.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. I love that scene.
When they go after him, and the Praetorian Guard comes up, you know, because the Praetorian Guard is the Emperor's personal. And so the Praetorians are there, and they're like this. They can tell they got different shields, they got different armor.
Right.
And he yells at him, Praetorian! And he comes running at him and just beats the living shit out of that guy.
Where the guy's sword is frozen in his sheath, and Maximus looks at him as he's struggling to get it out right before he smokes him.
Yeah.
He says, it's the frost. It freezes it. Peace!
Too long in the office there. Clout.
Douchebag. Peace. Yeah. No, in fact, I would rate that in my top five, like, war scenes. The opening scene of Gladiator. Yeah. Pretty. But you know what? That guy, when they mixed it up, once they mixed it up, you know, we talk about luck in combat. There's people everywhere stabbing and slashing and, you know, although the Romans look awesome as they close with the Germans. The Germans start shooting shit and the Russians, the Romans, right, the first rank, like, takes a knee and puts their shields up. The second rank shields their heads and they form this, like, bubble. And you're like, that's motivating, right? And then the cavalry, what do they say, stay online? Right? Oh, my Lord! And then the German Shepherd's running. You're like, this shit is awesome.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a great movie, man. Hey, what movie is, and I don't know the full quote, but the guy's like showing him around, the German officer, and he's like, he's taking over this German guy, and they're showing him like everything, and they show him like the table with all the troops that are stationed. And he goes, "So General, what do you think?" Or Field Marshal Kaiser, "What do you think?" "I see the Germans are still the best toy makers in the world." What? Remember that part? Because he knew he didn't really have troops, but they were all like these little models on the thing.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Rob Montana Man, if he's listening, I'm sure he knows. But it's they're showing the general around. You know, he's taking over, and then they say, you know, "What do you think?" You know, after they kind of show him the whole thing, "I see the Germans are still the best toy makers in the world." And everybody kind of looks like, "Oh shit," you know. That's but that scene, man, when he's like, "He's this is the force I got to fight with." Was it Patton? No, it wasn't Patton. But there's some really good Gladiator's one of them. I know Rudy's going. Rudy right now is going.
Top Gun. If you don't say Top Gun, like, how can this list be complete?
Yeah.
How can this list be complete? Gladiator is one of the best. You know, and again, I don't throw like Band of Brothers and those are too real. Those are not movies. So if you like combat movies, like what would it be? Not like actual battle shit, okay? So war movies that we would grow up, you know, scenes that are motivating. I'm trying to think in like Sands of Iwo Jima or any Apocalypse Now has some quality motivational shit in there, right?
Yeah.
They spent some money. They did some. Well, I mean, when I went through the basic school, that's what they would show. They'd yank out a videotape before class. All right, check it out. But Apocalypse Now had the first kind of disturbing scene that I ever saw. That I would say is real. And I used to watch those movies all the time. Like Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Guns of Navarone.
Yeah, Stalag 13. Guys got hurt and they would like wince and then tip over. You know, and Apocalypse Now.
They grab their chest and fall.
Yeah, John Wayne. One second he's reading a letter from his kid. Next time he tips over. You know, and they weren't graphic. They weren't realistic at all. You know, and I'm trying to think. What other movies as a kid? Because I watched all that stuff. You remember the TV Guide? Remember, like, the books we used to get? We used to, like, TV Guide. I would go through in Sacramento, and we had four channels. We had Channel 3, which is NBC, Channel 10, and Channel 10 was CBS, and Channel 13, which was ABC, and then we had Channel 40, which was a UHF channel, which back in the day, we hardly even had that. But I would go through the TV guide, and I would look for all these different, like, things that I could watch. And, that's back in the TV guide. Where's the TV guide? Oh, my God. That's how you know. A staple, the TV guide. Every week, a different version of it.
Robert Duvall. He played the two best actors as the Great Santini and Colonel Kilgore. You know, and as one is an army guy. But this is, I love this whole, they need some napalm down there in that tree line. And then, you know, they see these guys come rolling in, but he said,
hold on. What are you playing that on?
That's on my phone.
Yeah, if you play it on your computer, we could hear it.
I can't play it on my computer.
Why not?
How do you play it on your computer?
You go to the same page and you hit play? Like, listen to this. You're going to hear this. Everybody else is going to hear it because of Skype. This is Maximus getting ready.
Do I have to share it? I have to share it first, right?
No, it'll just come through the audio. It'll just come through the audio. You know what?
I can't hear you.
Wait, I'm not playing it yet. Hold on, here it is. Yeah, this is the Romans getting ready to kick a little German ass. Maximus with his wolf pelt thrown over his shoulders.
So back.
All the boys are standing up.
Whatever you're doing, stop.
Strength and honor. I like the catapult stuff. You hear the catapults?
I can't hear anything.
You can't hear anything?
No. Maybe you're the only one hearing it.
No, well, if I'm hearing it, everybody's hearing it. Everybody hears what I hear. Why aren't you hearing that? Why aren't you hearing that? That should be fed. It's being fed on this.
And I'm not hearing it, so not everybody. That's an
interesting.
But tell me if you can hear this then. Because I don't think you... So I'm sharing the screen. You can see it right now, right?
I have to go back to Skype. I was watching Maximus. I can see it. Yes. I hear nothing.
Yeah, you see the guy talking?
Yes. To commercial.
Yeah.
Is that Sophie Vierga?
Yeah, that's Sophie Vierga. So there's that scene, but you don't hear anything.
I don't hear it. Do you hear it?
Oh, yeah. I hear it.
So you're hearing the audio, but it's not going through. See, I could fix mine. I could fix mine easily.
What's this microphone do?
I don't know. It mutes you. Yeah,
I do it there. Is that muddled? Is it muddy?
Yeah, I can't hear that. It's just that's coming through your microphone. We have to figure out a way to wire your audio into your Skype feed.
I got to figure out a way to do that.
Yeah, we need to get you a mixer.
Oh, that's how you do it. That's right.
Yeah, I have a mixer. Yeah, so all I have to do is reroute my audio to a different channel, and then for whatever reason, maybe when Skype is using this channel, you can't hear anything else. But let's see if you hear this.
You know what? Let me look into.
Hold on. Do you hear this?
This is a story about individuals' heroic actions, but
do you hear that?
No, I heard silence.
Okay. All right. All right, got it. That's interesting that the audio doesn't get fed
through Skype.
Yeah, because it's all coming through my mixer. Like, you're hearing my microphone through the mixer to you. The other things that come on the same channel as the Skype, you're not hearing.
Well, I'm looking at...
Dude, why don't you shave? What is wrong with you?
Look at that, man.
This is... You're nasty.
Oh. Look at that.
When was the last time you shaved? Yesterday?
Oh, this is like this morning. I shaved last night. No, don't make me laugh, man. I'm trying to look. I'm looking at my microphone settings and my audio. It doesn't give you much.
Yeah, I don't. Why? Why? Hold on, I got a text message and a couple of emails for you. All right. Hey Mac.
Hey, look what I'm drinking out of though.
Hey Mac, to hell and back.
Huh?
Who's in to hell and back? Braveheart. I don't like Braveheart.
Braveheart sucks.
Yeah, because what's his face?
Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He gets they don't quarter him. What do they call that? What they do to him at the end?
Oh, put him on the...
Yeah, like they stick
the
that
horses.
Big... Yeah, they
well,
stick,
no, they should have...
No, they stick they that big sword up his horses. Ass, right? They stick that big sword up his ass and then cut him in two? I'm against that. I don't like that.
In the real world, I think what they did to him
What's
was they
called?
Put horses to each limb
no,
and
that's
pulled
called, them. That's called quartering. They didn't do that.
I thought they did that to him.
No, I know
hey, quartering. Hey, you see what I'm drinking out of my coffee?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Blue Diamond, baby. The
you know what that is,
it's
right?
Called it's what Guadalcanal, Southern Cross, coffee, Blue Diamond.
What big Blue Diamond coffee mug?
There you go. There you
out
go.
Of glass.
Yeah, etched. Mm. The what kind of coffee is that?
Good coffee.
It's good coffee. Is there?
Yeah.
That's the kind you drink. Good coffee. Oh, you got a whole pot.
Well, that's my French press.
Oh, you do like French stuff.
Well, they didn't invent this, I don't think.
Yeah, you're
I mean,
right.
We're not going to give this to them.
People just like...
It's like French fries.
The Braveheart Battles of Stirling and Falkirk. Yeah, I only watched Braveheart once. I didn't like the ending.
It's not so, a big fan.
It's kind of like Wizard of Oz.
It involved a girl.
Yeah, it's a love story. Braveheart's a love story.
Didn't really happen. No one goes. Okay.
Oh, To Hell and Back To Hell and Back is Audie Murphy.
Oh, that's a good movie.
Yeah.
That's the black and white one.
You ever seen a picture of Audie Murphy with all his World War II decorations? Marine Corps.
He looks fake.
Marine Corps.
He looks like a 14-year-old boy. That went to
his grandpa's uniform.
Yeah.
It looks ridiculous. He's got more shit on that uniform than it's like, holy shit. And it was back in the day before they had racks and stuff like that.
So it's pinned all over the place.
They hand jammed it. Yeah, I saw a picture of Chesty Puller and his ribbons. I'm like, what a shit show, man. Look at that stuff. Somebody needs to tighten his ass up. Mac, I'm an arty guy. I love that opening scene of Gladiator when the boys are cranking on those hand wheels and you can hear it go, kark, 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 kark. And then Maximus countermands that guy who becomes the leader of the Praetorian Guard. What's his name? I can't think of it. Do you remember his name? Maximus, and he says, I think he's going to move the archers or he's going to move the catapults. And Maximus goes, they're fine. Maximus is like the seasoned guy.
Right? Yeah.
Move them over here. They're fine. And all the troops go. That's why he's Maximus. He doesn't play chicken shit games as we're LDN right here. So, yeah, I love that.
No, like I said, when he looks into that forest, like right there, you can see it being played on the left side of my screen. You know,
it's awesome. With their battle colors, their battle colors and their emblems and the way the guys look.
Yeah, the legions.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And are all setting up.
Yeah.
And the guards. I mean, these guys fought for Rome and never went to it, never been to it. There's the Praetorians, so they're different color.
Yeah.
And there's purple. Maximus.
Purple.
With his wolf skin on top.
Yeah.
And this is where he gives his speech.
Strength and honor, boys. Strength and honor.
And he
stops and talks.
Hitler destroys that whole salute because that's the Roman soldier salute, but now it's ever forever known as
he stops and talks
the Hitler salute
to the big recon guy because like generals like big guys. Like you're a normal height guy down there. Like, hey, get out of my way.
Yeah, that armor makes you look. And then his second in command, that guy right there at the neck wrap around, he's injured. Yeah. That's a hard dude, man.
Yeah, that dude, he's the one that's moving the catapults. He's like, hey, move him over there. Maximus like, they're fine.
That's what Maximus says.
They're fine.
Here comes the crazy German.
They send the messenger back with his head cut off.
Yeah. That's how the barbarians did things.
You know
man.
What? But I'll tell you what. That if I
were a barbarian.
If I'm a Roman, I see that shit. Right?
There's the true crazy German.
Yeah. Time to pay, motherfucker. Time to pay. Let's go, boys. Strap it on. Let's kill these son of a bitches. It's time for them to die like everybody else in this empire does.
Yeah.
Rome comes. Oh. Yeah. You threw our dude's head? We sent him.
So there's the Braveheart boys, the berserkers and shit, up against a professional army.
Overmotivated.
There's that dog. Look at the wolf dog. Cool
boy. But then Maximus has a great line. No. No, the other dude looks at him and says, don't they know when they're conquered? And Maximus says, would we?
Strength and honor.
Strength and honor. Strength and honor. Hold the line! Hold the line! Yeah. That dog's motivated, too.
I think the dog gets some, man.
Yeah, the dog saves Maximus, I think, at one point. William Wallace. Yes, the real Wallace was quartered, and his parts were posted at four different parts of England. Whoa. Whoa.
Infantry corps, archers, don't they know they're conquered? Would you?
No, it's a great scene. It's a great scene. I watch it on a regular basis. Like that shit is motivating.
Cavalry comes ripping through the woods, those Germans are like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Where did they come from? But you know
these
what I like?
These guys can ride horses? They're sophisticated.
You know what I liked? I like the, and, you know, I hate to say this because I know there's already an air defense guys listening, but the flaming hay balls, I saw that. I was like, yeah, that's righteous, man. Get that oil on somebody and that oiled hay and fire it through the air. I mean, did the Artie guys actually figure that shit out, or is that something they just made up for the movie? Because that, I was like, whoa. I would have got fired up for that. Look at the movie Defiance, Daniel Craig, true story about Jewish guerrilla gang fighting the Nazis in Eastern Europe. Damn good movie. Add it to Wind River and Munich, which I'm supposed to watch. I mean, have you watched Wind River?
I know the name, yes.
Okay, haven't watched it. And the movie Munich.
Yeah.
Haven't watched that either. The, I'm trying to think other great scenes in war movies. You know, World War II movies made post-World War II were pretty tame. You know, it's a very, like, and as well it should be, a very damped down version of events for the theater. So,
right.
And now you can watch it, like, in Technicolor.
Hey, look at this picture. Remember that's the kid, Lucius. But look at him now. He's exactly the same, dude.
He still looks like a normal guy. Most of the time, there's those young Hollywood actors. What are you doing, man?
That's my phone.
Who's calling you?
I don't know. An 855 number.
855. That's New York City, isn't it?
It is.
It's New York City or the Pentagon. Maybe General Mattis is calling you. Hey, Mike, does he call you Gunner? Hey, Gunner, I need some advice
again. Yeah, he still calls me Gunner.
I need some advice again.
Well, I just sent him. I call him later.
Sent him the voicemail.
I'm retired. I don't jump anymore when you tell me to jump. I didn't jump back then either, but. At least
hold on.
Like,
here's a leadership question. Can we go back to the brief interlude into reality from the last hour? And that was the 2 extra weeks at boot camp. I'd be curious about what you both think of that. Boot camp, Marine Corps boot camp, you don't mess with it lightly. It's a big deal, right? Recruit training. The Commandant added 2 weeks. Your thoughts on that, Mike? Is it necessary?
Yes.
It is? Why?
Yeah. Well, because, you know, it needs to be longer because there needs to be that transition. You just can't put people right into this, you know, into this organization. The difference between this and everybody else, the other organization is it's an ideology. This ain't a job. It's not a, you just can't, you know, that's why you see when I was a recruiter, people are like, oh, I'm looking for a job. Get the fuck out of here. go apply down at Wiener Schnitzel down the road. That's not what you're here for.
You know,
and I used to tell them, I'm not going to promise you shit, and neither is the Marine Corps. We're not going to give you anything. You got to earn everything. Everything. The thing that I can guarantee you is that you'll at least, because I can't even guarantee you can get fed every day, or that you'll sleep under a roof every day,
actually,
or that you'll even sleep.
I can guarantee you sleep. That some days you will not.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of.
Here's one of the great things you hear when you join the Marine Corps about sleep. You're getting inspected, like in boot camp or officer camp school. And something's not done. There's Irish penance, or there's something with your reps, something. And you like, and they look at you and they say, why isn't this done? The candidate did not have enough time. Did you sleep last night?
Yes, sir.
Did you sleep this week?
Time.
Yes. So you had time to sleep? Yes. Then you had time. You're like,
You know, when I learned real quick when I heard, you can sleep when you're dead.
Whoa.
That became my thing, too. You're right. Sleep, that's just weakness.
Oh, shit.
So sleep when you're dead, boys. Sleep when you're dead.
So you hear that little, nugget, like, did you sleep? Then you hear this. You're responsible for everything your unit does and fails to do. And you're like, this is bullshit, man. Like,
yeah. Who, it's an ideology, yeah, man. It's a belief system.
Yeah, who could live like that? Who could live like that?
It's an organization that's built up of intangible, which are more important than tangible.
Ooh.
You know, so when we say honor, courage, commitment, and we say God, core, country, or maybe it's country core, but I always put
one of them.
The core before, never before God. And, I put it before the country. Because I always felt that the country would betray me before the Marine Corps would.
That's great. That's true.
That's a true statement. We always believe that.
It's true.
But yeah, it's crazy. But you know, here's the joke I used to say in the Marine Corps, and I know if someone's listening, some people listening, they might get offended. But the belief that I had of a Marine, in being a Marine, was it's okay to say the Army, and it's okay to say the Navy, and it's okay to say the Air Force. But you don't put, you don't ever put the word the in front of the Marine Corps. It's just the Marine Corps.
It's
just called Marine Corps. It's Marine Corps when you refer to it. Marine Corps. Right? And someone said, why? Why is that? Well, when you refer to God, you never say the God either, do you?
Ooh.
And people look at me like, dude, you're like crazy. No, man.
No, but we are the jihadists. We are the true jihadists.
We believe. Individuals.
Yes.
That believe.
We are the believers. And when we say that God, core, and country, we believe it as a core.
And people say that. They're like, well, isn't the country become for God or before the core? No, because the country will betray us before the core will. As in the past. But we will never betray the country.
See how that works? You got to be paying attention. Okay, you can't be drinking and be a part of that conversation.
Yeah,
right.
We would never betray the country. I would give my life for that cloth that hangs on my
wall. What about Clayton Lone Tree?
What about
him? He betrayed the country as an embassy guard in Moscow.
As a Marine? Yeah, I know. But he's serving his punishment for it.
Where is he now?
I'm not saying that we're
is he at a jail?
Oh no. Didn't he get life?
Let's find out. Clayton Longtree.
Where is he now? Born 1961, son of a Winnebago father and a Navajo mother. Served 9 years in prison. So he's way out.
What's he doing now?
You
know what? And I think, look, he didn't do it for money.
He did it for sex.
He did it for sex. So it's like, all right, she was hot. We got it.
No,
it
she was wasn't stupid. Hot.
She wasn't hot?
No.
Oh, man. I thought she was like a smoking hot Russian.
No.
You saw a picture of her?
Did you see a picture of her?
No, but somebody sent me another one. I'll tell you another motivating war movie. It's the Brits in, what is it, Zulu or Zulu Dawn?
Oh, that's a good movie.
Who is it? Michael Caine's a young guy in it.
Yeah.
Zulu, here's the email that just said this to me. Zulu charge into the Brits while the Brits were singing Men of Harlech. Is Moto, even when the singing by the Brits is fiction. Yeah, that was Moto. I remember seeing that. You know, the Zulu warriors, they form up and they're doing this chant, and you're watching it going, holy shit, man, the Brits are in this little fort. It looks like it's like a tenth of the size of the Alamo. It's pretty, and you watch it, you're like, holy shit. And that first sergeant, he's calling the roll, muscle man. Muscleman! Puts a line through Muscleman. McNamara! Yeah. Here, First Sergeant! Like, oh, those Brits are squared away. Why did they wear the red tunic, though? I mean, didn't really blend in. The concept of camouflage, was that, oh, no, that's not her, is it? She looks like a man. Let me tell you, if I see a picture of this woman, it's going to piss me off. It's going to ruin the rest of my day.
Oh, you know what a good movie is? Breaking Moran.
Never seen it.
What?
Yes, never seen it. About Australians fighting World War One, right?
No, they're fighting the Boer War.
Oh, Boer War.
That was a good movie. Because they're like, the Australians were being treated as second citizens by the British. And they're like...
The Brits.
Yeah, the Brits.
Those jackasses.
But these guys get charged with committing a war crime and then they get sentenced to die. But they die with style.
Oh, and that's important.
Spit in your face, yeah, Brits.
That's important. Mac, what do you think of the 2 weeks? I agree with Mike. Look, we're a different culture, you know, I've taken grief from other people, and I know other parents do, when you're demanding of your kids, other parents look at you like, what is wrong with you? Just let them do what they want to do. No, that's not the behavior required to be successful in life, right? And so... They come from that culture where that's the way it is. They do it on their terms, and when they hit turbulence, you know what they do? They fucking quit. Right?
Yeah.
We weren't allowed to quit shit in our lives. Right? Quit? My mom would have kicked my ass if I said I want to quit.
Right.
You know? But kids quit all the time now. Oh, their heart wasn't into it, so, you know, he's going to go do something else. Bullshit.
But they're still giving a reward.
Yeah.
That's the other problem.
It's okay. Just
so put... We show kids that... It's okay to quit because you still get what the winner gets.
Yeah, as long as it makes you happy, as long as that's how you feel, and so your whole world is built around how you feel. The whole culture, especially education, how did that make you feel? How did that make you feel? And then you come to a culture that says, we don't give a shit how you feel. This is the job, and this is...
I'm not the Me Too movement. I'm a don't give a shit about your shit.
Movement, but. yeah. Let's fucking go. And you know what? I remember the first time I ever did anything in Iraq. Paul Kennedy calls me and he says, hey, I want you to go downtown with me. And I said, okay. And so we go downtown to see the chief of police. We were at Hurricane Point and, you know, I hop in with him. I wasn't in his vehicle. Actually, I was in Sergeant Major Booker's vehicle. And Jim Booker, who's a great guy, who's living in Texas, by the way.
He's living in Texas. Yeah.
You got to find him.
I know.
That's your task, by the way. So anyway, we stop a half mile and we get out, right? And I look at Booker and I said, why are we getting out? And he said, they know we're coming, so we'll probably get ambushed. And so all these Marines pile out, and I can't remember the sergeant's name, but he looks at him and he says, all right, boys, they fuck with us, they die, let's go. And you had all these, I mean, Mike knows because he did this a lot more than I did. You have all these young studs. You don't have to look to see if everybody's going. Hey, like, are we all here? Let's do this. Let's get it on. It's the most intoxicating experience being around Marines when you go to fight. It's awesome, you know? And, you know, in fact, I'm getting fired up just talking about it here. So you're going to come into that culture from the wussy culture. Those extra 2 weeks are important. They're important because you got to get them mentally prepared to what they're going to. And boot camp doesn't do all that. Boot camp shapes them, but I think those extra 2 weeks
it tears that individuality out and shows the emphasis on the team.
Right, right. Here's another message.
We need more.
Master and Commander, Last of the Mohicans, Patriot. Braveheart.
Last of the Mohicans. There's some really,
when that guy's running and he throws that sword, like.
Yeah, it goes smack into the skull. And then he
that's a good
steps
shot,
on the
man.
Guy and pries it out like a freaking lumberjack out of a piece of wood.
That's mine. Give that back. That. Give that back to me.
But when they're tossing the rifle, he shoots that guy. And they're like, oh, the way they're synchronized. Yeah, And he's a Billy Badass. When he sees his son die,
he's pissed, yeah.
And he's like, oh, shit. And so Billy Badass that killed his son is sitting on the cliff, and he does the knife thing like, oh, old man, I'm going to cut you up. And then the old man's like, comes at him, clunk, one arm broken, clunk, the other one, clunk, ole, clap. And then smack in the side of the head, pry it out of him, he falls off. You know, like, don't mess with that old man.
Yeah.
When you're an old man Indian running around killing Indians, the only reason that you're good or you're an old man is because you're good.
Yeah. You didn't get
those guys die off.
Everybody else died because.
But the problem I had with that movie is they put a girl in it.
You have to have a girl, though.
Madeline Stowe, who is a good girl to look at, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But
it's the love interest, man. That's how you.
Yeah,
make
I know.
Movie.
But when the little blonde girl jumps off the cliff because her boyfriend, Indian guy that she was going to hook up with, you know, is a double date. You know, my older sister is dating this half Indian. I like the other Indian, so he dies, so I'm going to jump off a cliff, because, like, come on. That sends the wrong message.
Maximus has a love interest. What's-his-face is Commodius' sister. That's, you know what, I'll tell you
what. But the movie ain't focused on that.
Yeah, I know. Well, kind of a little bit. You know what I like? When Maximus kills him at the end, and he's got the knife, and he's turning it slowly, and he's looking at him, and then he, like, boom, and then he gives it to him. Fuck, I love that shit.
Yeah, but I like I said, even though, but when your problem with that is, but see, Breaker Morant, no girls.
What? No girls in Breaker Morant? Come on, there's got to be a girl. There's got to be a
girl. It's just like your typical, you know, the war girls, the war horse, you know, let's go to town and.
Oh, those girls. Yeah. Those R&R girls. What about, here's another email, Bat 21.
Stupid movie.
Danny Glover and Gene Hackman, right?
And Gene Hackman. Stupid ass movie.
Alright. It's
good story. It's a true story.
Based on a true story.
Yeah, but stupid ass movie.
Really? I've never seen it. I saw the one scene where they're, like, downed and they're running with their, like, 38 caliber revolvers and shit. Like, oh, man. Good leg.
Sergeant York.
Good luck with that. Alvin York. You know what? Alvin York and you know, licking that front sight post and doing the turkey gobble.
Yep.
That's cool.
And then turning back. That's motivating. Cracking him in the head.
That's motivating.
But I love it. It's like, he's got that genuine, like, hillbilly. Sir, you sent me out to go do this, but on the way I captured these 100 Germans. I don't know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to violate it.
What do I do with them?
Yeah. You know, but Alvin York, great role model. You read about him after the war.
Yeah.
He comes back a hero. The town puts together all his money, builds him a house, buys him his land. And so he lives out the rest of his life. What he wanted to do. And, you know, he was a big conscious objector. He didn't want to go to war.
Yeah, he didn't want to go to war.
And he was drafted or, you know, he gets down there, he argues, and they make fun of him. He's chicken shit coward. And he's like, no, I'm not a coward.
Yeah, let me tell you, I'm looking at this picture.
You know what we need to do? History with Mike and Gunner and Mac. And we do, like, our version of history, but we drink, too. Like, they do drunk history
month. We don't need to drink. But that's the best part. Were you guys drinking when you did that? No, we're straight up sober. Audie Murphy, man. He looks like a Philippine general on Halloween night. It's, like, it's absolutely, positively, absolutely. I just want to read his Medal of Honor citation, okay? Because he jumps up on a tank. First of all, there's no way he should have lived. Okay, the craziness that he did, is no way that Audie Murphy should be alive. And it's not like the Germans couldn't shoot either, okay? The Germans could shoot. And he does what he does, and you're like, holy shit, man. Holy living shit. All right? And so let me grab his Medal of Honor citation. It's, yeah, it reads... Like, and that's why we talked about luck or skill. Straight up luck, okay? There's no way that he should survive this.
For skill, yeah.
Yeah, second. Here, let me, I've got to blow this up. All right. Let's see. Second Lieutenant Audie L. Murphy, 15th Infantry, Army of the United States, on 26 January 1945, near Holworth, France, commanded Company B, which was attacked by six tanks and waves of infantry. Lieutenant Murphy ordered his men to withdraw to a prepared position in the woods while he remained forward at his command post and continued to give fire directions to the artillery by telephone. Behind him, to his right, one of our tank destroyers received a direct hit and began to burn. Its crew withdrew to the woods. Lieutenant Murphy continued to direct artillery fire, which killed large numbers of advancing enemy infantry. With the enemy tanks abreast of his position, Lieutenant Murphy... Okay, look, we're talking about German tanks, okay? Abreast of his position. Okay, boys, when we see that, what do? It's time to get the fuck out of here, right? Lieutenant Murphy climbed on the burning tank destroyer, which was in danger of blowing up at any instant, and employed his 50 caliber machine gun against the enemy. He was alone and exposed to the German fire from three sides, but his deadly fire killed dozens of Germans and caused their infantry attack to waver. The enemy tanks, losing infantry support, began to fall back. For an hour, the Germans tried every available weapon to eliminate Lieutenant Murphy, but he continued to hold his position and wiped out a squad which was trying to creep up unnoticed on his right flank. Germans reached as close as 10 yards, only to be mowed down by his fire. He received a leg wound but ignored it and continued the single-handed fight until his ammunition was exhausted. He then made his way to his company, refused medical attention, organized the company in a counterattack, which forced the Germans to withdraw. His direction of artillery fire wiped out many of the enemy. He personally killed or wounded 50. That's what? Like, what happened? Yeah. I don't know. I blacked out. Why don't you tell me what happened? Do you know what you did? No, I have no idea. But you read that shit and you're like, how is he not dead? Can you imagine the amount of lead that went by his head and body and just missed him?
Oh, yeah.
Tons.
But, okay, so let me... We talked about this maybe 2 years ago. So you want to read about, and I'll find the book again, but read about, and he's not American. He's actually on the losing side. He's a German.
What do you do? Is this the pilot?
Yeah, Eric Hartmann, who lived through the whole World War II.
All right.
352 aerial combat kills.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I don't even know how many hours this guy actually played. But you read about his shit, you know, you're like, whoa.
This isn't the guy that didn't shoot down the bomber, though. That's a different guy.
No, that's a different guy.
Right.
That's a different story.
And this
guy's a beautiful story.
This guy's name is what?
Eric Hartmann.
Hartmann.
Two N's. Imprisoned after in a gulag for a while and then released... Back to West Germany, became a West German general in the armed forces, and then basically helped them scope out. But I mean, he's a young kid that wanted to, you know, fly, and he was just there, and he wasn't a Nazi. He was a pilot. But,
yeah, you know,
1,404 combat missions, participated in 800. In 25 aerial combat missions.
How many?
Shot down 352 Allied aircraft.
825. 1,400 combat missions. Aerial combat in over half of them. Hello. Yeah, somebody loves you. Somebody loves you, man. Yeah.
Skill.
Yeah.
That's skill, dude.
Yeah. No. No. In 1,400 missions, you know, you're right. It's part skill, though, right? But, Mike, we know there's a fair amount of luck in it, too.
Yeah. We gave the Medal of Honor to a guy who gets 25 kills, right, in World War II.
Aviator type?
Yeah. This guy doesn't get the German Medal of Honor, which is the Knight's Cross with oak leaves, swords, and diamonds, the highest. He doesn't get it until he gets a 301. Like, hello? I mean, again,
yeah.
This guy's a true hero in my book.
Here's the target.
A very good life. I think he just recently passed away.
Here's a target brief in during the Russian campaign. We're gonna go wheels up in an hour, and then you're gonna head east and about 60 kilometers, and then what? just start ripping it up, okay? There's targets everywhere. There's Russian tanks everywhere. They fill the dirt. Okay, so just shoot in the ground, you'll kill Russian tanks. They're everywhere. I mean, honestly, when you read about the battles on the Eastern Front, it's like mind-blowing. Like, holy shit. And these guys went up there and fought every day.
Pure violence back then. Yeah.
You know what's interesting is to read the first accounts of, like, the Germans had a few jets that were operational. To read the accounts of American pilots that saw a jet go by, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
Right? And you hear them talk about it. Like, this, I saw it, and then it was by me, and the noise and the power of it, you felt it as it shuddered your aircraft if it came near you. It's like, what in God's name is that? But, yeah, pretty interesting stuff.
So, look at this, though. You know, so on September 20th, 1943, Hartmann was credited with his 100th aerial victory. Okay?
Right.
He claimed this, he claimed four that day to end at 101. At this point, he was the 54th Luftwaffe pilot to achieve the century mark.
Yeah, but you know what? I know, but that's, I mean, look, they were fighting everybody. They were in a cage match on two fronts fighting, for years.
But I mean, to get to 54, I mean, like, what? There's 54 more guys in front of me that have better kill reeks than 100?
Yes, because we're fighting all over the world, and we're fighting all the time.
Yeah.
That's how much they fought. And so if you lived, if you survived, you had kills.
Yeah, that's amazing to me.
No, yeah, it is. It's staggering.
On June 1st, 1944, Hartmann shot down four P-51s in a single mission over the Polesti oil fields.
Oh, we wanted the Polesti oil field.
Yeah. Now, later that month, during his fifth combat mission with American pilots, he shot two more P-51s.
Shit.
Yeah. When eight other P-50 ran his Mustang out of fuel, or a Messerschmitt, He got in a tangle with eight P-51s, and they didn't shoot him down. During this intense maneuvering, Hartmann managed to line up one of the P-51s at close range, but heard a clank when he fired. He had run out of ammunition.
I hate that clank. Click.
While hanging in his parachute, the P-51 circled above him.
And he pulled his pistol. Hartmann, he pulled his pistol out and shot down three more?
Yeah. Hartmann wondered if they would take the opportunity to kill him. One of the P-51s flown by Lieutenant Robert J. Goebel of the 308th Fighter Group broke away and headed straight for him. He was making a camera pass to record the bailout and banked away from him at the last moment, waving at Hartmann as he went by. That's a class guy, man.
What would you have done?
I would have done the same thing. I would have came by and taken a picture of him. You know, because those guys, like Hartmann did the same thing. There's stories where he has accounts where he knew that his opponent was out of ammunition. He pulled up on the wing, gave him a wing salute, and then flew up. I'll get you another day. You know, I want to be a fair fight.
Well, you know, and it's guys who wake up with the same, you know, the same mindset. You know, it's so different, I mean, when we think about it. I mean, they were fighting until the war was done. Right, they weren't rotating home. This was every day, and they knew the odds of them surviving this shit were not good. Right, and they were yet. You know, you read about Jimmy Stewart has talked. There's some stuff on with him talking about. I can't remember he flew a ton of missions over Germany. What that was like, and they went up and they fought in the skies every day, and the respect they had for each other. And they, you know, some guys made it and some guys did not. But it was, different when you're going there for the duration. How long are you going to be gone until it's done? Out to the Pacific, right?
That's the name of the book. The Blonde Knight of Germany.
Stuka pilot. Yeah, I used to, I found, I went to meet, I stuck my head into the Germans. The German liaison officer's office at Fort Knox when I was there. And, right, the Germans, they do tanks, okay? They know how to do tanks. So But I had read a ton, and I walked in, I introduced myself, and he said, sit down, would you care for coffee? I said, I don't drink coffee. He says, what? He said, you need to start drinking coffee. German coffee is the best. I said, I don't drink it, I'm sorry. And so I said, do you mind if I talk to you about the aftermath of World War II and your military? He said, no, I'd be happy to talk to you. I said, you know, do you guys still have those associations? He said, we do, but they have to be very careful how they meet, because any meeting of the German army or the German or the Luftwaffe or the Air Force gets the Nazi thing hung on them. And we were young men. We fought for our country like anybody would fight for their country. Put your password in. I want to see it.
Look, it comes up. Look.
Why is all this stuff? Why is all this stuff coming to the
There's house? My password. Did you see it?
To the house.
My password's dot, 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 dot.
Mac got my Amazon.com account. But he said, look, he said, losing wars is bad business. He said, my advice to Americans, don't ever lose a war. I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, we had incredible tradition in the German army, you know, and then this National Socialist Party hijacks all of our history, really hijacks our country. But we were young Germans. We went and fought for our country. That's what we thought we were doing. He said, when those things happen, it doesn't work out well for you. He said, it's frustrating because somebody else writes the history, and we're all Nazis now. And
right.
The truth is, we weren't all Nazis. And he said, but, you know, that's what happens when you lose wars. So, you know, don't lose wars. It was a very interesting conversation, one I'll never forget. So, anyway. All right, what are you doing this weekend? We're like an hour over for whatever reason, because you're being
we're not an hour
you're
over.
Being chatty Cathy today. Yeah, we're 54 minutes over.
We're good.
What are you doing?
It's raining all weekend.
It is?
Yeah, it's great. It's beautiful.
Really?
Yeah, I'm probably going to hook up with Ron and Ralph this weekend.
Still got to
go see Buck.
Why haven't you seen Buck?
Like I said, man, I've just been running around. And I can't. I mean, I know it's does. That's not an excuse. I just. Why do you show me going in a tube?
Because one of the nurses sent me a picture.
Like,
why'd you wear black?
Yeah, right. It wasn't that big.
Why'd you wear black?
It looks like I was in some kind of Transformers anus or something. That thing was huge.
It isn't it?
That no, is huge. It wasn't like that.
It wasn't?
No.
Who knew?
It was comfortable. Yeah, actually, you know what? It looked kind of like that, but I had a blanket over me because it was freezing in there.
You know, I fell asleep in mine, too.
Yeah, they're comfortable.
Yeah.
Even the banging. You're like, oh, yes. Because I don't get it why. I mean, it's fine. I just don't understand why medicine has to be so advanced but so primitive at the same time. This huge thing that can see through your brain, but it goes bang, 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 bang. Yeah.
Let me ask you, here's an interesting email, and we'll kind of end the. If you don't want to talk about this, that's fine.
Go ahead.
I'm curious what you guys think about the demands. Evidently, the woman who is accusing Judge Kavanaugh of some kind of attack in high school, that he not be present and that she will testify last. Do you think that's right, fair thoughts? Mike, have you heard any of that? Or?
First of all, let me say something. If those skeletons ever came out of my closet of, like, high school, I would probably get lethal injection. I mean, you know, the whole thing of the world has changed. I get it. We're more politically correct. We're more aware of our feelings and the way of other people's stuff is. And I understand that. And I'm not bashing on people. But to hold people accountable for actions in high school, you looked at it. You know what? You mad dogged me. You must have been thinking about killing me. No, I just thought you were stupid. Oh, I'm stupid. You know, people are too, let it go. Let it go. If he mistreated you in high school, let it go. Did he violate a law? No. Did he call you names? Sure. Was it right? No. But what can we do about it? What can we do to correct it?
Well, how
many?
Let me ask you this.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to ask you to put your fairness out of it. Be fair to both people, okay?
Yeah.
How do you, so she says that I was somehow or other assaulted. There's no corroborating evidence. There's no other witnesses that are going to testify. She's going to come and say this stuff. And then.
I think it's bullshit, man. I mean, I look back at my high school, like I said, you know how many girls when we were young, like, were smacked on the butt? I didn't do it to assault them. But today, that's sexual assault, sexual harassment.
Yeah, I had that argument with my daughter. She said, it's an unwanted sexual advance. I said, is that? Okay, so what happens...
But we're doing our own definitions, though. See the problem?
Right, right. I said, okay, so then what's next? That I looked at you and you were violated by that? Is that where this goes?
Yeah.
So we're in a bar and you walk by and I said, we grew up doing it, right? Pinch somebody on the ass. That's now a sexual assault? Like, get out of here with that shit, right?
So what's
fair to her? So to me, if you were running this hearing and you were going to allow her to testify, how would you run the hearing?
I wouldn't even bring her in.
I know, but what
relevance does it have? So now she's in.
Right. You're running the hearing. How do you do it?
I would bring Kavanaugh up and say, will you apologize to her? Yes, I'm sorry. Okay, now get out. We're done with this.
You do heavy-handed gunner. To me, it's like she's allowed to come. She tells her story. He's the one that gets the last word, though. Right?
Yeah,
He gets to defend himself. He's the one.
They're not going to do that, though.
I bet they will. If that's her conditions, first of all, you don't run this, okay? If you're going to come here, these are the rules. And if you don't want to live by those rules, then don't come. You didn't file a police report. Nobody else can corroborate this. And now you're going to derail the appointment of a Supreme Court justice after a long, distinguished career for something that happened in high school, and you're going to dictate the rules too? I don't think so.
Yeah. No, and I get it.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the problem, because it's a double standard. And we're talking politics and party lines. Again, if people say if the shoe was on their foot, it would exactly play out the same way.
Yeah, we're not victims, but it's got to be fair for both people. She can come, right. She can say what she has to say, she'll answer questions from the senator, but he gets to rebut it, okay?
Right.
Because he's the one that's the nominee.
Right.
Innocent until
proven guilty.
Hello?
Right?
Hello? But that's not how the Me Too thing works. This thing has gone from we ignore it to now the mere accusation causes you to lose your job.
And that's when Harvey got in trouble, I didn't defend him. I didn't really like the guy. I didn't know the guy. But again, the same thing. People were already, you turn the news on, they're condemning him already. I'm like, did he already have his day in court? Oh, no. This is just because once someone says something, we take that, and that's the truth.
Yeah, and it's not like you have a responsible media that is gonna look for the truth in all this. Get this story on, get it to the top of the fold, and get us follow-ups and comments from these people. Okay, first of all, Hillary Clinton, she's besties with Harvey Weinstein. Okay, he raised money for her, blah blah. Here's all the pictures. We need Hillary Clinton because we need to leverage this thing. Yeah, got it. All right, we're on it. Let's keep this thing up. Keep it up. So. Anyway.
All right. Well, hey, I'm going to send you. I sent you some contact information. You're going to talk to this guy this weekend or tomorrow, I think.
All right.
Be set up.
All right. I'll give him a call. All right. Say goodbye.
I'll talk to you later, man.
Say goodbye. See you. That is Michael Christopher Musselman. What was that? That was a. I'm not even sure. What happened? As I said, that email is interesting, the last one. Both of them should be treated fairly. Okay. I'm not victim shaming anybody, but let me tell you, when there's nobody else that can corroborate your story, and I, from what I've read, people that were at the party, the best you're going to get is, well, I heard something happen. Well, what was it? You know, what was it? And now we're going to stop somebody from all these years later, we're going to stop somebody from being nominated to the Supreme Court. Not even a police report filed. To me, it's got to be fair for both people. And then it goes where it goes. So, and again, the whole political way that the thing's been handled, it's just like, it's just greasy, you know, but that's what we, should we dare expect anything more from our politicians? The answer to that is no. I had somebody who said to me recently, you know, people that whine about the system, you know, they have their heads in the sand. And I kind of bristled at that. Right? I know the system is the system and it just acts the way it acts. It is democracy in as we have designed it. But to think that, most of the same rules were in effect 20 years ago and they didn't behave this way. So how do we get the behavior to change? And the answer is you can't. And that's frustrating because everything is just scorched earth, burn it down. Is that the way it's always been? And I just didn't know that. Maybe. Pretty pathetic if you ask me. Yeah. Bonus coverage here. On a Friday. Don't touch that dial. You're going to hear some audio in the next hour of Jeremiah Workman, Staff Sergeant, United States Marine Corps, retired. As I kind of put together my post-traumatic winning program, and the more I do it, the more I love it, to be honest with you. Yeah. There's audio clips that I look for, and the reason I look for them is because when I do this stuff, you know, I'm scarred by it, okay? And some of the audio is seared into my head. So when I'm thinking about doing a class or something, as I do just about every day, then I go looking for these things, and I started writing them out on a piece of paper, and I went looking for them. And then the more I look, the more stuff I find. And there's so much rich stuff about mental health, about post-combat related mental health, things that should be used for leaders to introduce them to things that they'll deal with post-combat. And what Jeremiah Workman's is so instructive in that he did good. Yet even in what he did that day, he felt like he failed, right? And then his story is his failure is then held up for everybody by his Navy Cross. So he's constantly forced to go down that road. And so it's a 2.5 hour, what I did, where this 37 minutes came from was, some people aren't going to want to listen to 2.5 hours, and I want to get them what they should get out of this interview. And so I would go through and I'd listen to the interview, and I'd target the most incredible things he said, and I would kind of gut everything between it. So I listened to the whole interview doing that. And then I went down and I tightened it up as much as I could. And you listen to it, and it's just an incredible walk through his experience. And the Marine Corps made it worse. The VA made it worse. There's a part that's not in here. It's in a subsequent interview. I should get that and put it in. But it's he tells the story of a therapist at the VA who's from the Middle East, and he's talking about the issues that he's having, and she looks at him and says, you know why you're having these issues? And he looks at him and says, why so many of you are having these issues? And he says, well, why? And she says, you're fighting an unjust war. What? Yeah, he got that at the VA. He ultimately had her fired, or got her fired. Her conduct got her fired. He didn't get her fired. But, yeah, and then the Marine Corps says, hey, let's put him over at the museum. He can talk about his Navy Cross all the time. That's a good idea. And then his life changes. So, anyway, thanks for listening this entire week. More good stuff. More good stuff for All Marine Radio. We will cover the Marine Corps Marathon live. Yeah, how about that? So we'll go there the days preceding it, and I don't know if Michael will join me, but we'll see. And we'll cover the cultural event of the year for the Marine Corps, the marathon. It's an awesome event with incredible storylines through that. At some point, we're going to head to Camp Lejeune, and then at some point, hopefully, we'll head both to Okinawa and Camp Pendleton. Have a great weekend. And remember, post-traumatic winning is about getting your hands around whatever stuff you have and then taking the knowledge you have when you're able to, sticking your hand out and helping other people's that have been touched by trauma and do not have the benefit of the education we have about that. So don't be afraid to do that. In that way, you'll experience Grinch moments. And we love Grinch moments. So, on a Friday, do good things. All Marine Radio, over and out.